Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello, and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. After 2 weeks in the big chair, Glenn McFarlane has been benched, and I am back in control. And Macca, preliminary final weekend. It's always my favourite round of the season. And whilst those prelims were complete slaughters, they were still great stories. And funnily enough, the two best teams of the season, I think, have made their way through to the grand final, even though, for reasons that I'm still unclear of, we will have to wait 2 weeks for the grand final. How are you, mate?
Good, Mick. How are you? I feel like Robert Harvey. I've been given the interim role for a period and then told, thanks, mate. No, thanks. You can walk on by. But you're doing a great job hosting already, and I won't be critical at all. Just on that, what you said, I love preliminary final weekend too. It's a real cruel weekend. We had two absolute fizzes of games, but all it does, I think, is, as you say, put the best two teams in the grand final. But why aren't we playing this Saturday? I think it's got the hallmarks of being an absolute classic, but we've got a week off. What's going on, Mick?
Well, just on your first point, one of our key listeners in New York City made the call that he wanted me back in the big chair. So it wasn't my decision. But on
which key that we talk in the top of the pile?
Pretty high up the food chain. It's just made the what was when Barassi said Healy off and who? What was that?
Allingworth on. Come on, you got to get it right. Allingworth on. And then can we say Weekers? No, we can't say that on the podcast.
No, we can't. You know,
I think that's harsh. I thought I did a very good job. Just on that, like, seriously, why have we got a week off? It is the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. We want to get it done. And it's like, you know, waking up Christmas morning and Santa's delivered all your presents, but you have to wait until New Year's Day to open the presents. How ridiculous is that?
Well, has anyone actually given an explanation of why it is? Now, obviously, the Bulldogs do have to serve 7 days in quarantine, but they've been in quarantine for the whole season, and I'm not sure that it would have worried them having to play a grand final just hanging out in their hotel. The implications worry me a little bit for Melbourne. 1 game in 28 days, I think that's the number. You could say 2 in 29, but still, it reminds me of in 1990 when your team stuffed up the finals, that draw against West Coast and Essendon.
God bless them.
Say, what's the famous joke? He kicked 5 goals in the 1990 grand final. Anyway, it's interesting. We're going to have to fill some space here for 2 weeks, Macca. But let's start with the winners, the Bulldogs and Melbourne. Then we'll deal with the two losers, Geelong and Port Adelaide. But Melbourne on the Friday night, what an absolute whirlwind that was. Chris, Maxi Gawn, he's 5 goals, incredible. Oliver and Petrarca. May was the only worry with the hamstring, but the fact he got back on. When that game finished, you thought, well, it's Melbourne by how far? And then stunning upset on the Saturday night. It wasn't just an upset. It was a slaughter.
It was. It was an obliteration, wasn't it? And you're right about Melbourne. You always got to organise your tips nice and early for the grand final. And I'd had Melbourne by 31 if they were playing Port Adelaide. I kept thinking the Ron Barassi line, 31. As soon as I saw the Bulldogs win and the way they were able to win and thinking that they've got the week off, I've gone Melbourne by a point. I know that's a bit soft. But it was the two games couldn't have been, more similar in a sense that both, Victorian teams got out and they took an absolute huge lead early. And you kept thinking, are these teams going to come back? Even at halftime, I had a bit of a feeling that Geelong might have been able to come back. They weren't. They were far from it. Melbourne came out. You talked about Max Gawn. Is that as good a ruck performance as you've seen? I know he spent a bit of time forward as well that you've seen in a final. It's got to be up there. Brendan Goddard said yesterday that he can't remember a better ruck performance in a final. You have to go back. There's only been one ruckman, legitimate ruckman, win a Norm Smith medal. I'm just wondering whether Maxi might be number two.
Cautionary tale, because when he started in the competition, that's been done to death, but he was a pretty average player. He looked average. I was down at Geelong for 3RW when he had that breakout game years ago where he was best on ground and upset win. He's never looked back. He's astonishing player, such a great character, one of the most unique characters in the game. I don't think he's going to be able to, you know, it was a bold play by the Dogs to get Steph Martin in, and the Tim English thing still intrigues me, playing as a forward. But, yeah, what the incredible for me with the Dogs was their depth players. We know how good their midfield is. We know how good Air Norton is. But it was guys like Shacky again, Mitch Hannon. I saw someone tweet, why didn't they tell us that Darren Jarman had possessed Mitch Hannon's body? I mean, he was extraordinary with his high marking and his goal kicking. I'm thinking, wow, it's almost a 50-50. I think Melbourne, I'm leaning towards Melbourne just, but Luke Beveridge, he really is a master. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I love everything about him. I love the fact he goes to war with nincompoops in the media. I love the way he defends players like Treloar, and, you know, that even the fact they wouldn't let them train Macca.
Yeah, he loved that, didn't he? He loved that.
Yeah.
He loved that. You know him pretty well.
You've interviewed him a lot of times. He doesn't like many people in the media. He likes you. Tell us a bit about how unique he is.
Well, he's incredibly unique. He's a storyteller, and I reckon the great coaches are storytellers, and he is that with his team. That's a pretty awkward thing to do with a young sort of the generation of today. They don't really get a lot of stories, but he just milks some amazing stories. He's been great to me. His grandfather and my grandfather played in four premierships together at Collingwood, and there was that sort of link there. And he does, you know, his grandfather was one of the great players, the great centerman of all time, a guy called Jack Beveridge, absolute superstar. And I actually wrote to Jack when I was a little kid, when I was young, and I got a nice letter back. And Luke believes all that, is a great student of history as well. And I remember speaking to him in the rooms after they knocked Hawthorne off in 2016 in that amazing finals run. And we both looked at each other, and I'm sure I thought it more than him. He was thinking about what it meant for the Bulldogs going forward. But I was sort of thinking that it was going to preserve Collingwood's four in a row record. But he knew all about that. He's just a great story, pal. And he's I find him a really open and honest guy. Like, I know that he supports his team. He did promise me an interview the day after the Dogs won the flag. If they were to win, he said, I promise you the next day I'll do you a one-on-one interview. And I thought, this is not going to happen, Mick. There's no way. Went out to the Western Oval, the Witten Oval, and there was this mill of people, just was so packed up on the stands. The players have got the cup up with Bevo, and Bevo looked across at me, and this is the mark of a man and his honour in terms of his word. He looked at me and he said, come here. And I went, yeah. And we went down to his rooms while the players were still up on the podium. We went down to his coach's room downstairs and we did an interview. And I'm like, mate, that just showed it wasn't about the fate, you know, him wanting to be fated in front of the fans. He actually felt an obligation to do an interview, which was, it blew me away, Mick. And he's just that sort of guy. I'm not sure he got it completely right on the weekend, just with some of his language. I agree with what he said with Adam Treloar, and I love the fact that he stood up for him. I'm not sure. He got a little bit personal that I don't think he had to. But other than that, wouldn't you love to play under him as a player?
Yeah, see, I disagree with you. I like the fact he labels journalists with a black soul. I like everything about him, Macca. If you're going to have a go at one of my players, cop this. But the fascinating thing for me, Western Bulldogs playing in grand finals was unheard of years ago.
Yep.
They're back into another grand final, and it's just like, you know, this is the new normal at the Bulldogs, and he's a pivotal factor. Think back to 2014 at the end of that year when Ryan Griffin walked out and they sacked the coach, and, you know, they were cactus. And what Peter Gordon and the Luke Beveridge have been able to do, it's just phenomenal. It's Melbourne who are the fairy tale,
it is.
57-year drought, et cetera, et cetera. And the Bulldogs, you know, who John Elliott said had the tragic history. They're the ones who have been here and maybe will be a little bit more relaxed. Guys like Johannesson have come into form. You know, I reckon he'll get into the 22. But enough on the Dogs. Take us into the Melbourne camp. I'm worried for them having this practice match.
What a joke.
Well, why would they be put in a situation where they need to play a practice match leading up to a grand final? For God's sake, Macca.
They have to do it. That's because this rubbish decision. That's because the bye, exactly. But they feel like they had to. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm just praying no one gets injured because you don't want to be in that situation. I don't think I'd be playing Stephen May, would you? I might just be saying, Steve, you know, we'll do something else.
In the grand final or in the
I'm playing him in the grand final. Come on, what are you talking about? But I'm not playing him in the practice match. I'll be saying, Steve, we've seen enough of you. We know what you need to do. Don't play in that. But the fact of the matter is, it's ridiculous that they have to be in this situation to do it. So I know it's too late.
What if there's an injury, Mackett? What if someone gets injured badly in that practice match? Fair dinkum. It's lunacy. Yeah. But look, we'll talk more next week's podcast about the grand final. Yep. Let's get on to the losers. Geelong on Friday night and Port Adelaide. God, it would have been long odds for Port to be a worse loser than Geelong. But when I compare the two, I know that Port Adelaide are younger and they can restock and maybe it's all over for Geelong. But that was insipid from Port Adelaide.
It was. They were, and they were ambushed. I reckon that's the word. They were ambushed from the start. That first, you know, the first stoppage, and you know, the ball goes up, and the Bulldogs get it out. You just knew they were on, and I've never seen some of those Port Adelaide young guns fumble the way they did. I'm not saying they shirked the issue or anything like that, but they were nervous. They fumbled, and yet they had everything in their favour, like they did last year. They could have easily. What would have been a great counterfactual, Mick, if Port Adelaide win that preliminary final? Do they win the grand final last year? I think there was every chance to win the grand final last year. And again, this year, what would that have been? So I'm not sure what
the difference, Macca, the pressure of that preliminary final last year against Richmond, you know, it was an epic, every inch of the ground. There was no pressure. Finals always go up. That was just pathetic. The lack of pressure. From start to finish, maybe early in the third quarter, they fired a shot. Massive questions over Port Adelaide. I know you know it's great effort to get to fourth, but they, to be honest, were never able to beat the top teams this year. They beat Geelong, but that form wasn't really franked. So,
and that's the problem, isn't it?
Still something missing.
Elite teams.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that's their issue. They can't beat elite teams, and you know, you look at their list and you look at Ken, and Ken's 10 years next year, and I think he's a great coach, Ken Hinckley, but you could see the frustration almost from the start of the game in the coach's box. He could feel very, very early on that they weren't switched on. Now, is that the coach's fault? Is it the player's fault? Is it something to do with preparation? I don't know. I don't think we'll know for some time, but they'll be back next year, but I'm fascinated to see whether you think Geelong will be back next year.
Yeah, that's what I was saying at the start. I think Port, even as bad as they were, that you know, they're a very young team. Well, they got some young players. I mean, they're going to have to look at the Hamish Hartlett's already been moved on.
Yep.
He wasn't in the team. Charlie Dixon, well, you know, he was pretty ordinary. I don't know if he's carrying an injury this year, but Geelong, they're a different kettle of fish. When you hear people like Matthew Loy questioning whether Joel Selwood should go on, that's interesting. They had the whole virus excuse. I don't know what you thought of. I mean, if it's true, then yeah, fair enough. You bring it up. But it was...
I'm convinced it's true.
I think it's more the way they play Macca.
Yeah.
Geelong.
Yeah. Their game style, their game strategy. Yeah, that's a problem. Their list management is a problem too. Like, you know, you look at someone like Stephen Wells, who has been one of the great recruiters / list managers of all time. He hasn't really been given the option to be able to get too many, you know, at a national draft to show his wares like we know that he's actually got. So that's an issue. But you're right, the game style, and what is fascinating at the moment is to see that we're, you know, basically Chris Scott, you would think, would continue on. He's contracted, so you can't see that he wouldn't continue on, even though there's that little hint around Carlton and Brian Cook almost certainly going there. But his assistant coaches are moving on. If you look at it, Matthew Knights is going to West Coast. He's been there a long, long time, and he's a good operator. There's all sorts of talk about Corey Enright potentially even ending up at a Collingwood or something like that. And Matthew Scarlett, what happens to Matthew Scarlett? Does he stay at Geelong or did he go elsewhere? So we may see Chris Scott stay in that role, but there may be a whole new team around him to potentially change some of that game style.
Yeah, well, and then if they can mix up and play more of a chaos game, it's not really my strength game styles, but to me, that safe defend with the ball has failed way too many times, and Chris Scott needs to change the game plan. Don't know if he will, but don't even know if he'll be at Geelong next year. But
I think are you telling me here? Come on, what are you telling me here? Do you think he could end up at Carlton?
Oh, I don't know where he could end up, but I know he's contracted, but until it's all, I know he was asked a question. He said, I won't answer my phone, but until we get through this next 4 weeks, and that we're going to talk about the merry-go-round after the break, because there's just action galore and, you know, people are moving clubs everywhere. You wouldn't say it's guaranteed that Chris Scott will be there, but who knows? But on that one, Macca, let's take a quick break and come back and talk about all the other 14 clubs. So, Macca, as we said, there are 14 other clubs who've got a bit of a head start on these other clubs in terms of working out their list strategy and their off-field setups. And I can't remember a busier time, to be honest. Yesterday was epic. You had, let's start with Collingwood announcing Justin Lepich joining Craig McRae, the senior coach, with Brendan Bolton as well. As a person who was taught from a very young age not to like Collingwood, I am really impressed with what they're doing with their football department, having that proper process. I was thinking to myself, did Craig McRae go in there and say, well, you know, it's not just me. I reckon I can get Lepper. I reckon I can get Bolton and these guys. And, you know, I don't know if you heard Justin Lepich talking about the fact that he's not just a defensive line coach, but he's a head of strategy, looking at rival game styles and that sort of thing. And he played, of course, in three premierships with Lepper. So really impressed by the way Collingwood are going about things. And if they get Jeff Brown in the big chair, which I anticipate they will, suddenly the Pies are going to be in really good shape.
Yeah, it won't happen overnight. It's going to take a bit of time, but I think they've done a really, really good job. You're going to let go of your hatred of Collingwood, really, Mick. Really, it's, you know, the 1919, 1927, 28, 29 grand final wins over Richmond. They've clearly shocked you, haven't they?
I told you that my grandmother's brother played in for Collingwood, and so I don't know where you get this hate for Collingwood, but
I was just going to say, when you talk about Craig McRae and what he was able to do at his presentation, which he presented obviously to the subcommittee, he talked heavily and he lent on Justin Lepich, and he also lent on Brendan Bolton, who he formed a really close bond with. They were only together 1 year at Hawthorn, but they formed a very, very tight bond. So we broke the story a week or so ago about Brendan Bolton likely to go to Collingwood. Lep has been the worst kept secret, if you like, for a number of weeks now. And I really like what they're doing. They're going to have a team, Mick, a team of coaches around him. And that was the strategy all the way through, was to have a team of coaches around the senior coach. And I think they're going to head back to almost pre-COVID levels. Whereas other clubs are paying a lot of money for their senior coach within the soft cap, it means that they can't have as many people around them. Collingwood's going to be the complete opposite. So it's a really good strategy, I think, from Collingwood's perspective.
And some of the other movement, we've got Wayne Campbell looks almost as certainty now to go to the Gold Coast Suns as their football boss, replacing John Haynes. I've got to say, I'm surprised if that's going to be their only move over the off-season. That is not enough for me to just replace one football boss with another. I would have thought that the AFL would be pushing for far greater change, given that the basket case they've been for a decade. But who knows? David Hale, Macca, played in the three premierships for Hawthorn, 2013, 14, 15. He's going to join his mate Sam Mitchell, so he leaves Freo. Josh Marnie staying at Essendon. The footy boss, looks like the AFL are going to split that Steve Hocking job in two, and that doesn't interest Josh Marnie. So well done for him to stay at Essendon. Where does that leave Brad Scott? Does he get the AFL job? What's going on with him?
Has anyone spoken to Brad Scott? Has he gone missing? I think everyone's tried to get hold of him. He's been very low-key, hasn't he? So very, very low-key. Chris Scott said he's not answering his phone. I can tell you Brad Scott's not answering his as well, other than, I'm sure, to the higher echelon of the AFL. But you would expect that – I know that there's been an interest from Carlton, but you would expect that he would likely take up that AFL role. Until he actually does, we don't know for certain, but – it's going to be fascinating to see. And does that rule him out of coaching forever? If he does that AFL role, is there a way back for Brad Scott to be a senior coach, do you think?
Well, I would think if you're out of coaching for a lot, look, maybe not forever, but if he goes down that path, it means he preferred he'd be an administrator rather than a coach. Remember, his brother famously said that he didn't want him to coach. So Bob Murphy as well, he's going from radio to Fremantle. Dean Solomon, I'm told, who has, I think he owns a gym these days. Ridiculous decision for him to not be involved at Gold Coast. One of the best assistant coaches going around, a fierce competitor, but a terrific bloke. He's in demand. I don't know whether he might bob up at Essendon or Richmond or Perth, but he's another one.
There's been talk. Mick, about even David Teague potentially ending up at Richmond as well. Dale Tapping has left Brisbane Lions. He's down in Melbourne. He's returned to Victoria. There's been a few clubs interested in Dale Tapping. He was in charge of that Brisbane midfield. And if you remember back to Lachie Neal's Brownlow Medal speech, he really credited Dale Tapping with, you know, helping to, you know, transform his game. So he's another one. Gee, it's just a fascinating switch, isn't it? Most of the senior coaches are... We've had those changes of the head senior coaches already, other than Carlton, but certainly the team underneath the senior coaches are changing rapidly.
The great unknown is Carlton. I'd be interested in your theory. I saw a report that Chris Fagan had been approached by David Park, and I don't know if that's true, but they're certainly having a crack at everyone. I even heard someone suggest, might have been someone interpreting Greg Williams's little video he did for the Carlton website, saying that Diesel was saying that depending on your experience, there'd be a different sort of process that you would have to go through. Brian Cook is now, in my view, $1.05 to go to Carlton. And I still think they can get Alistair Clarkson, despite all the denials. That would be something.
It sure would. Like, it doesn't go away, that does it? Even though, as many times as James Henderson has said no, that the word doesn't go away. So it's funny with Carlton, and you look up process in the dictionary, the process in the Carlton dictionary is very, very different to the process in other dictionaries, isn't it? So you shake your head about some of the things the Blues have been able to do. It might turn out okay. They might come out the other end of it and have the right candidate. But at the moment, it's all over the shop. You would think that if they're going to... they were originally talking about a 30 to 45 day sort of process. You would think that they would give Alistair Clarkson until maybe the grand final. And then if he's a no, then really you've got to move on. But they are looking about at the moment. There was some talk on the weekend that Don Pike might be involved, that there was some suggestion there. But, you know, the Swans were sort of, you know, in a sense, that would be news to the Swans who were expecting him to be a part of the, you know, the Swans team next year. It's been a really, really weird period to Carlton. So you can never say never with the Blues, can you?
What about the player movement? You do the Moneyball column with Ralphie and Jay-Z. Do you think that's going to be a fizzer in comparison to this back office footy department movement?
Yeah, I think it will. Mind you, when we spoke like this time last week, we were talking about Lachie Neal potentially going back to Fremantle, and that was quickly and swiftly, came to a swift conclusion with, Lachie Neal to stay.
Has it really come to a conclusion, Magan?
No, it's come to a conclusion.
Or is it just being put on ice for does it emerge again when the trade period starts?
I would be surprised that that would happen, but when I say put on ice, I think it's probably put on ice for 2 years or certainly a year. You would expect him to stay with the Brisbane Lions. Mind you, you never know what can happen. Dane Beams got up at a Brisbane Best and Fairest only a few years ago and said he was committing to the team, and within months he was back at Collingwood. So, but I would expect Lachie Neal to stay now, at least for this year and potentially next year, to see out that contract. But you would think, I know there's a lot of whispers around, and Michael Barlow, his former teammate, is convinced that he'll end back at Fremantle before the end of his playing career. But just on the movement scenario, Jack Billings will stay now. He was a free agent. He'll stay at St Kilda, signed a new deal. I think it's 4 years in regard to that. So I think the free agent, and speaking to a few people around the traps, they're sort of suggesting it's a bad time to be a free agent at the moment, because there's a lot of clubs that are that are up to their necks in salary cap and are struggling to deal with having enough money to lure someone across. But they're also don't have the wherewithal in terms of draft selections to make it happen as well. Like, I think most of the focus is going to be on Adam Chera in the trade period, but there'll be something else, Mick. I'm sure there'll be one that just comes out of the blue that we're not sure of as well. So I think it'll be a bit quieter than we were originally expecting, but you never say never in draft week, do you?
Do you know if the salary cap is set in stone for next year or not?
I don't think it is, from my understanding. And you know these AFL things much more than I do, but I think a few clubs are still a bit wary about what's going to actually happen. So I think they've got a rough indication, but I'm not sure it's fully clarified to them as well at the moment.
All right. Well, you need to know how much money you can spend if you can start buying some things. Although I don't always go by that philosophy, having a look at my credit card statement. But look, we'll take a quick break. I want to come back and talk about some more Peter Volandi's magnificent leadership with the fixturing. I want to talk about Jeff Brown. And then I want to get your Brownlow prediction. Macca, there was a huge song and dance made by the fact that the Melbourne Storm, who, what a great club, by the way. You talk about Geelong playing in a lot of prelims. These guys playing prelims for fun. But there was some angst over the fact that the Storm preliminary final was going to be up against the AFL grand final. I can understand that, but they are different codes. But Peter Volandi's, being the man of the people, Macca, he said, man, you know what, I'll move that to 4 p.m. I can't imagine your mates at the Docklands showing that sort of fixturing flexibility.
Agile and flexible. What do you mean by mates at the Docklands? I know that you're you speak to Peter Volandi's probably two or three times a week, I think, Mick, don't you? And he always makes your call. In fairness, he's taken my call a few times as well. But it was just a dumb decision, really. Did they need to do it? Was it vindictive?
Why was it a dumb decision?
Why would you put up that game against the grand final? Why would you do that?
Then aren't their preliminary finals always up against the grand final? Or, I mean, it's the AFL who are It's the AFL who are involved in cultural vandalism by putting a grand final on at night for only the second time in history.
Vandalism. I'm with you, though. I'd rather a day grand final.
So really, this is absolute garbage. This is about a Volandi's thing. The AFL grand final has always been played in the day, and the preliminary finals of the NRL are always played at night. So actually, wrong, sycophantic Melbourne media. Volandi's has shown that he's prepared to give the fans what they want by moving that to a twilight fixture, but that's just more.
He had to, because it was embarrassing that they'd done it. He had to do it. He was going to lose.
Was it embarrassing?
Well, it would have been ridiculous.
The AFL didn't even tell us what time the grand final was going to be played until a week ago.
No, all I'm saying is that they had to make the change, and they were always going to make the change, particularly with Melbourne Storm playing. Like, seriously, that shafting Victorians, they're good at that in the NRL. They don't like Victoria, and they don't like us because Melbourne Storm is so good. And you talked about them in the preliminary final. They do things that Geelong doesn't often do, and that is actually win preliminary finals and go through to a grand final, even though they did it last year.
Now, in between all of this, we're going to have the Brownlow. I think it's going to be on a Sunday night. We're going to have the mannequin with a medal hanging off, and the player has to go and pick up his own medal this year. Is it too deadly to have someone present you with a medal in the same COVID bubble?
I wouldn't have thought so, Nick. I think they should be okay over there in Perth. That you should be thinking that the winner might come from Perth, because it might not at this particular stage.
When the magic of the Brownlow has worn off a little bit for me. As a kid, though, it was just an epic night, and you just couldn't believe, wow, that guy is a Brownlow medalist. His life changes forever. Still love, you know, the award, but don't necessarily always watch it till the end. But what's your favourite ever Brownlow memory?
Oh, that's a really good one. I love the unfortunately, I didn't go to the Shane Crawford one, but there's some great stories that I can't tell on this amazing podcast with Shane Crawford. And the fact that one of his mates, this is a classic, So they've partied all night. It was in Sydney. It was the Brownlow that was in Sydney, that's if right. you remember rightly. Yeah. And one of his mates, there was a party back in Shane's room, and one of the guests kept calling Wayne Jackson in his own bedroom, and Wayne Jackson got calls at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. At the end of the day, I think Wayne had enough of it, but I wasn't there for that. But I think one of the bizarre ones that I was sort of a part of, and been lucky enough to go to him since about 95, and haven't been for a few years, obviously, but was my wife, Christine, and I just happened to be walking, trying to sneak past the red carpet one year, just trying to sneak our way past. And unfortunately, there was a young lady and her Brownlow guest who, no, he wasn't the Brownlow guest. He was the Brownlow, one of the Brownlow favorites who happened to be walking past. And it was Beck Judd was wearing that red dress. And so whenever over the years that they've shown Beck's red dress, Christine and I are sneaking away in the background. So we got made, that's closest to Brownlow history I've ever been a part of. What about yourself?
Talk about what's a life-changing moment.
What's your favourite?
I love Dipper's speech as a kid when he made the gag about he came for the free meal. Do you know, I've always thought the Big Four, I was about to say the Big Four with Crown Casino, but there's actually been another one recently, and that's actually to do with governance. But the Big Four with the design of Crown Casino, can I say, Macca, is the lack of a after-party venue. Now, that had that Club 23 for a while. That was okay. But the Atrium Bar is just a real letdown for me, you know, when everyone goes down there. When the world reopens, please, Crown, give us a good after-party function. Actually, one year at the Brownlow, I haven't been – I've only been to a couple, but I went with Robbo one year. It's his guess. It was the year that Joe Watson won, 2012, and wow. He had a little after-party in the River Room, and Robbo and I – got in there, and it was just incredible to see. Actually, it was Tim Watson, the pride on his face, you know, his son standing there with the medal. I always remember that. And of course, it was only 2 months later, or maybe 3 months later, that huge scandal erupted, and he lost his medal. And we all know what a dog's breakfast that whole thing was. But that was probably my the thing that sticks out, to actually see. Yeah. A winner with all of his. He had all his schoolmates there. Geez, he was good that year too, Joe. Yeah, of course,
he was
and Mitchell ended up winning the medal.
Yeah, Cochin and Mitchell, who both had great years that year, and absolutely no doubt whatsoever. It is funny, the magic of the Brownlow, like having a bit to do with the great Kevin Murray, who won the Brownlow in the year that I was born. I won't tell you what year it was, a long time ago. But
1934.
No, come on. What are you saying? I'm 34 years of age. No, I'm a bit older than that. So, It was 1969, and he was 31, I think, at the time, or around about that. One of the older Brownlows. His Brownlow. I've worn it. He carries it. He wears it around his neck. And what he's done to the Brownlow is just and taken it to the people has been quite amazing. He wears it around his neck. Anyone he meets, he asks them if they want to put the Brownlow on. They put the Brownlow on. It is just, he's done so much for the Brownlow by sharing it with the people.
I've told you, my mate, one of my best friends, Drew Warnsmith, grandfather is Ivor.
Yes, Warnsmith, the great Ivor Warnsmith.
He won two Brownlow medals, and his was stolen from his home in Ivanhoe, I think the family home, in about 1958. And it wasn't until late in his life that he confessed to his family that they'd been stolen. I think there was some tradespeople at the house, or they never really sure. They were tracked to the Gatwick Hotel in St Kilda at one stage seen.
Wow.
At one stage, I tried to, when I was back in general news, tried to have a bit of a sniff around. And I spoke to a senior cop who was involved in, had knowledge of the black market sports memorabilia racket, and he says, and I'm sure it's still the case, this is 20 years ago or 15 years ago, but he said there's a massive multi-million dollar trade of this stuff that goes on. I mean, what sort of sicko
thinks that it's
okay to be buying Ivor Warnsmith stolen Brownlow? So they're out there somewhere,
Matt. They are. There's about six, I think, Nick. There were quite a few others that actually went missing as well, and I tried to get a story out one day and couldn't quite get it, but there's about six Brownlows that that were either stolen or lost. You talk to Ian Stewart, he claims that he lost a couple, or certainly one, I think, from memory, because he was moving house and it got put into a storage and he lost where it was. And so there you go. There might be a story for us to do in coming years about where these missing Brownlows are.
Well, Tony Shaw's 1990 Premiership jumper, Macca, was stolen. And he still doesn't know where that is. I mean,
I guarantee you it's not at my place.
But, you know, these are the sorts of things that actually it's really pathetic.
Yeah, it is.
Think that it's okay. Someone somewhere has got Shorey's 1990 jumper.
That's disgraceful. And that's a jumper that, you know, it should be with Tony, or if Tony didn't particularly want it, it should be at the club. And that's the beauty of clubs. You know, they actually do a really good job. Collingwood just had Murray Wiedemann's, all of his premiership medals and Copeland trophies. Murray died not all that long ago, and his widow has donated it all to the club, which is fantastic.
Just on Collingwood, there's a board meeting this Tuesday.
Yes.
I don't know if it's the scheduled board meeting or they're just meeting to discuss this Jeff Brown situation, but it does seem as though Mark Corder is surrounded.
Is he going to go, Nick? Please get to, let's cut to the chase.
The strategy, you know, is that he's being encouraged to go and have a graceful exit. Now, I think Corder's preferred option would be for Jeff Brown to join the board and serve for some time, and have Jeff serve some time on and have a handover like that. But the people in Brown's corner don't think they want a clean, immediate handover. So it's not resolved. I wrote a piece saying he's inching closer. It'll be fascinating to see what comes out of this board meeting and whether some of the other directors, you know, put the pressure on Mark to go. But it's either that, or you have a full spill of all seven board positions at the AGM on December 16. But once you trigger that spill, there's no turning back. You wouldn't be able to call that off. So that's the imminent pressure of, okay, well, you know, are we going to do this the nice way, or is it going to get ugly? Now, of course, Jeff Brown doesn't have a right to the presidency. It's a political game being played, but it seems, my interpretation of talking to people, is that it's pretty much a done deal that Jeff would go in on the peaceful angle, but it could still blow up.
Yeah. What about Carlton? I'm fascinated to see whether that's going to go anywhere. Do you think there'll be an EGM at Carlton?
Those papers have been lodged. That's a separate one. Jeff Brown's holding back his options, whereas Vince Lotrisano and his group have lodged it. Now, I haven't heard anything from the club. I haven't heard from Vince's camp for a while either. But as I say, once you've actually lodged the signatures, you're obligated under corporate law to follow through on that. So I'll have to check that one out, Macca. But it's possible we could have two club elections this year.
Wow, that'll keep you very happy and very busy, Mick.
Would anything else before we go, Macca? Can I get an early grand final tip?
Yeah, early grand final tip. As I said earlier, I think this is weird because I always go into a grand final wanting one particular team to win and being on one side. This one, I'm completely torn. I love the Bulldogs. I love Bevo. I love Adam Treloar. Just means a lot to me because I really like him as a guy. But Melbourne and the history and just to see what Neil Danaher, you know, the image of that they put out of Neil. And did you see Barras again this week sending a message to the players? It's just inspiring. I'm going to tip Melbourne. Give them hell. How good was that? Keep your focus. Give them hell. Absolutely sensational. So I'm going to tip Melbourne by a point. And wouldn't that be one for the ages after really two horrendous preliminary finals? They were great to see from the teams that were winning, but were just terrible games in the sense from the opposition. But who are you settling on, Mick?
The tragedy, Macca, is the fact that it's not being played in Melbourne and the MCC members, which just has that really unique roar when Melbourne are up. Can you imagine how good it would have been this September? Like even the prelim, like this, if they could have smacked Geelong. They've also got a heavy MCC membership as well. It would have just been magic in there. And that's the part that I spoke to a Melbourne supporter the other day, a friend of ours, and she was saying that she didn't want them. One part of her didn't want them to win the premiership because how sad it would be not to be in Mount. Now, not committed to that thought, but these are these thoughts that are going through these supporters' minds. You know, I've just, it's very sad, and it was good to see so many Melbourne members are able to give their tickets to West Australians. But why isn't it played in Victoria, by the way? I mean, seriously.
What do you mean? You reckon you could play it there?
Well, why not, Macca? I mean, I'll watch the NFL opening round of the weekend and the college football, and they've got COVID and they've got full. Anyway, don't bring the politics into it. I say it to you.
You brought it in. You brought it in, not me.
But anyway,
it's going to be in Perth and they'll do a good job, but by God, it's got to be back next year. And don't put it past these two teams being back there. They're both relatively young sides when you look at it. I think Melbourne, the average age is 24. The Dogs are a little bit older, but gee, the Dogs have got two of the best young players you would ever see. How is Bailey Smith 20 years of age? And Aaron Norton is 21. Can you believe it? So these two teams are going to be up there for quite some time. So hopefully they're back in grand final day again next year at the MCG.
Hopefully not. But, you know, Macca, we've got all week to talk. We'll do another podcast next week and talk about the same game. But it's been great to have you back as the number two wheel on the show. And we'll catch you next Tuesday.
Great hosting. Thanks, Mick.
See you, mate.